The information presented on this program is not intended to take the place of your personal physician's advice and is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Discuss this information with your own physician or healthcare provider to determine what is right for you. Welcome to Sanitas at sanitasradio.com, because your health and longevity should not be classified information. And now, here's your host, Mel Fabregas.
Greetings to everyone around the world, and a warm welcome to another edition of Sanitas at sanitasradio.com. I'm your host, Mel Fabregas, and I sincerely thank you for joining me once again. And to listen to tonight's full interview and all of our material, all you need to do is subscribe by going to sanitasradio.com. And if you would like to write to me, you'd like to be a guest on this radio program, or would like to submit a guest suggestion, I'd love to hear from you. Just go to our website and click on the contact link. And like us on Facebook. And tonight, we'll take you on a journey that is likely to change your life and the way you look at the cannabis plant, your government, and Big Pharma. You will relive one man's journey of rediscovering the cannabis plant's natural healing ability in cancer and other diseases, and what happened when he tried to alert the world that he just might have found the cure for cancer. Having healed over 5,000 people using only cannabis extract medicine from plants grown in his yard and processed on his back porch, tonight's guest will outline his experience with both the patients he healed and the institutions which he attempted to educate. Needless to say, you will not hear tonight's discussion in the mainstream media, at least for now. Tonight's special guest is Rick Simpson, a retired power engineer who worked for 25 years in the medical system in Canada. After suffering a severe head injury in 1997, he took all the medications that the doctors prescribed, but their side effects did nothing but harm. So in desperation, he turned to the use of cannabis extracts, which he produced himself, and quickly found that he had discovered the greatest natural medicine on earth. After learning the truth about the amazing healing abilities of these extracts, he then went to everyone in authority to have its use recognized once more, but found that in reality those who control our lives wanted to keep the truth hidden from public view. Having nowhere else to turn, he then made this knowledge public, and since that time, countless individuals worldwide have used this information to cure or control illnesses for which our current medical system have no solution. And we have more, a more comprehensive bio on our website. His website is phoenixtears.ca, and he joins us directly from Zagreb, Croatia. Hello, Mr. Simpson, and welcome to Veritas. How are you?
Oh, I'm not doing too bad, brother, and I'm happy to be, you know, happy to be able to do this show with you, because, you know, this is just about getting the truth out to the public, and they need it so badly at the present time.
Absolutely. My pleasure and my honor to have you on. May I call you Rick?
Yes, by all means.
How did you come, because I want to go in chronological order here, how did you come to discover how to cure cancer and many other illnesses with hemp? Take us back in time.
Well, actually, I first learned about this back in around 1974-75. It was about two to three years after my 25-year-old cousin had died from cancer. And I mean, at that time, you know, cancer was very rare. And we're in the middle of an epidemic now, but at that time, you know, cancer was quite rare. But I'd heard this report on our local radio station. The announcer came on; he was laughing like a fool that day. But, you know, he stated that a study that had been done in the U.S. had proved that cannabinoids like THC were actually killing cancer cells. You know, I didn't know it at the time, but it was the Medical School of Virginia study they were referring to. And that study was actually designed to prove that cannabis caused cancer. But instead, it proved just the opposite. And as soon as they brought this evidence forward, the American government immediately shut the study down, confiscated all the cannabis research from the universities in the states that they possibly could. And then after they got rid of Nixon, Gerald Ford, he passed it all back to the pharmaceutical industry. You know, it's a very sad state of affairs. But But it really was due to my head injury. I mean, I didn't start smoking cannabis until I was about 35. And mostly, you know, at the time, I just wanted something to relax and to get away from the alcohol and things of that nature. So, you know, I started growing my own in 1988. But, I never looked at it like a medicine. You know, it was just something you did in the evening to relax. You know, I knew many growers, and we all grew small amounts, but, you know, basically just to supply our own needs. But after the head injury in 1997, it left me with what they call post-concussion syndrome. Now, I have this ringing in my head 24 hours a day, and that drives your blood pressure crazy. And, you know, I had balance issues afterwards because of the head injury. And, of course, the doctors, they stuck me right on, you know, the chemical highway. You know, take this pill, take that pill. And this went on, well, for the first year. And it was about a year after I was injured that I watched this television show in Canada. We have a show called The Nature of Things with Dr. David Suzuki.
Sure.
And this particular episode was called Reefer Madness 2. But I was sitting there watching this, and it was all of these patients with many different serious illnesses, and they were smoking cannabis and having wonderful results. So I went out and I got some cannabis, and I knew the effects of cannabis, but, you know, at the time with the head injury and all these medications, I was pretty badly messed up. But I started and I tried the cannabis, and sure enough, it worked better than anything the doctors were giving me. You know, I couldn't sleep with this condition. That's the problem. I was, I was in a state of constant exhaustion for about 5 years due to the lack of sleep. But even cannabis, you know, smoking it would only knock me down for maybe a couple hours, you know, and then the noise would, you know, it was just, you'd pass out from exhaustion and then the noise would wake you back up. But the cannabis, you know, smoking cannabis did give me a bit more relief than anything the medical system had provided me with. And, I went to all the doctors, to ask for a prescription, because in Canada we had this, marijuana access program, which is really nothing more than a bad joke in reality. But all the doctors I went to, they all said the same thing. You know, it's still under study. It's bad for the lungs. You know, stay away from cannabis. So 2 years later, in 1999, I had continued, you know, because I worked in the medical system myself, and I was an engineer, and I believed in it, you know. But by 1999, I was getting in a very bad situation, because the effects of these medications they were giving me were making me suicidal, you know. So I was in a pretty bad way. But finally, I don't know, I just decided, you know, well, if cannabis helps me, you know, sleep better than any of the medications the medical system is giving me, what would happen if I take good cannabis, you know, indica bud, and wash the medicinal trichomes, you know, that contain the cannabinoids off the plant, you know, with a solvent, and then produce the oil. So I went to my doctor's office in 1999, and I brought this subject up to him. And he got it when I said, you know, what would you think if I was to make the essential oil from the hemp plant or cannabis hemp plant and ingest it, like, you know, as a medication, you know, as opposed to smoking it? And he got this real strange look on his face, but he did admit at the time, he said that would be a much more medicinal way to use this substance or use this plant. So at that time, I made the extract. But the problem was, I mean, with all these warnings the medical system had given me, I was afraid to take it. You know, because I knew it would make me sleep, but I didn't know what else it would do to me, you know.
You were brainwashed like everybody else.
Exactly. So it was actually almost 3 years later, in late 2001, the doctor called me this one day. Well, he just told me there was nothing more, you know, that he could do for me. He said, you know, they tried everything that they had at their disposal. And actually, by that point in time, my thinking processes from the effects of these medications they had given me were so bad that I could hardly even remember my own name. I mean, it was horrible. But having nowhere else...
Losing you again, Rick.
Anyway, so I went home and I started ingesting these extracts. And, at first, I was really Yes, are we back?
We're back, and I connected to a different internet line on my side. So hopefully, I mean, if it's not you, then hopefully this should work. Let's cross our fingers.
Okay, that's the best we can do, brother.
Yes, I know. So let's continue.
Okay, I'll just pick up. After the doctor had said there was nothing more they could do, I asked him for another prescription, but of course he wouldn't give it to me. So in desperation, I went home and I started ingesting these extracts. And I was taking it about an hour before bed. And what I found is I increased the dosage. Just started giving me the rest and sleep that I needed. And suddenly I started losing weight, which kind of scared me. I lost about 30 pounds in total, or 35 pounds. And then the arthritis in my knees disappeared. My blood pressure came back under control because living with this noise 24 hours a day drives your blood pressure crazy. And it didn't take the ringing away, but what it did, it allowed me to live with it. That was the most important thing. And this was just the beginning of, you know, when I started to see these medical wonders that this plant, you know, can work. And then it's about the time I started to realize what a fraud our whole system truly is. It was about a year after the medical system cut me loose in late 2002. I went in to see the doctor about these three lesions I had. One was close to my, on the side of my nose, close to my right eye. And then I had one in my left cheek and one in my chest. So I'd had them since the 1990s and they wouldn't heal. So I strongly suspected they were skin cancer. So I went in and I seen the doctor, and the doctor, the one by my eye was the one they were most concerned about. So they sent me in to have that removed. And then they said they'd do the other two at a later date. So I went in and I had the operation. And it was about a week afterwards that I was looking at the area they had operated on, and of course it was infected, which is common these days in hospitals, unfortunately. And it was right at that very moment that report I had heard, you know, almost 30 years before popped back into my mind. But I thought, you know, if this was really true, then, you know, and that these cannabinoids could actually cure cancer, well, I had been eating the extract then, not on a grand scale, but I had been eating quite a bit of it in the evenings for a year. And I thought, well, if it was true, then how could I still have cancer if this cured cancer? But, you know, the trouble was at the time, you see, I still had that blind faith in the medical system and in politics. I thought that no one would ever prevent a cure from cancer, or, you know, for cancer from coming out. You know, I had that, you know, and surely to God they would use it.
Right.
You know, so, but just to find out, I went down and I took just a drop of oil and I put it on the lesion on my left cheek and I put it on the one on my chest. If you have a basal cell carcinoma, it feels like you have splinters in the affected area. You know, like wood splinters, that's what it feels like. And, you know, there's usually some puffiness and a little bit of bleeding, that type of thing. It's irritating. And so, you know, these were the effects I was experiencing. But as soon as I put the drop of oil on each one of these lesions, and then I put a bandage on, that splinter feeling went away immediately. But I didn't feel anything else. So for 4 days, I left the bandages in place for 4 days, and then I went down to the bathroom to remove them. And I remember I was looking in the mirror when I took the bandage off my cheek, and I was just shocked because the lesion was completely healed, just pink skin. And the one in my chest was the same. So I started telling friends and neighbors, you know, that I thought that I had cured my cancer, you know, with the use of these extracts. And, of course, everybody just laughed at me. You know, they thought I was crazy.
Yeah.
You know, marijuana can't cure cancer, for God's sake. You know, what's wrong with you? But about 7 weeks after they had performed the operation on the one close to my eye, it came roaring right back. And I watched it develop for 3 or 4 days, that same splinter in the face feeling and the puffiness and bleeding. So I went down and I put a little drop of oil on that cancer and put a bandage on, left it for 4 days. Now, that's over 13 years ago now. I've never, ever had to retreat these areas. So, I mean, immediately afterwards, within a week or so, I went down to my doctor's office. I got a copy of the pathology report, and it stated right in the report that I had basal cell carcinoma. So I talked to the doctor's receptionist, who happened to be his wife, and I told her I would like to come back in the evening and talk to the doctor about something I'd been working on. So she got this funny look on her face, and she said, well, what's this about? And I said, well, that cancer they removed close to my eye, I said, it came right back. So I cured it and the other two areas using hemp oil. And the minute I said hemp oil, that woman just went rigid. I mean, I was in a waiting room with five or six other patients, and she literally started screaming at me. You know, the doctor will not go there. The doctor will not prescribe this. And, I thought the woman had gone right off the deep end. So I got in my vehicle, and I was on my way home that day, and I got thinking about it. I said, if I was a small-town doctor and one of my patients had cured their cancer with something natural, I think I'd want to know about it. So what's going on here? So and right afterwards, I started passing it out, these extracts out to people with skin conditions and, like psoriasis, skin cancer, bad burns. This stuff is amazing on burns. Anything like that you could treat externally. And then a few months later, since I'd been eating the extracts myself and found them to be totally harmless, non-addictive, I started supplying it to people with internal, conditions, like MS and particularly cancer. And the results I was achieving with the use of these extracts was just beyond belief. So then I went on a campaign, in Canada. I went to every political party in Canada. I went to two federal ministers of health. I went to Dr. David Suzuki, with his television show, The Nature of Things. I went to the Canadian Cancer Society.
What did Dr. Suzuki say when you contacted him?
Well, I never even got a reply from him. They said he was out of the country on a speaking tour. I was in touch with the foundation, but I offered the foundation. I told him, I said, well, I'll send some extract out and you could test it yourself. And the letter I got back was, we're a foundation. We don't do, lab work. Okay, you're not interested, which was ridiculous. We even took this to the United Nations. Nobody would lift a finger. And it was then I realized that, the whole system is standing against this plant. And it was around that time that I shut off my television, too, and I started watching documentaries. And then really for me, it was like knowing what I knew about the healing powers of these extracts and seeing all the other problems in our world. All you had to do was connect the dots, follow the money. And this is what happened here. In reality, what they did, we grew cannabis all through history with no regulations at all. It's actually been man's best friend. And it was widely known that cannabis was basically the most medicinal plant on earth. So why would anyone outlaw its medicinal use?
What changed in the 1930s when this was outlawed for the first time?
Well, this goes back a bit earlier than that. It did have something to do with William Randolph Hearst and his yellow journalism.
Right.
He's the one that gave it the name marijuana. But, it had more to do with the Rockefellers. See, in the early 1900s, 1906, 1907, the Rockefellers got together with some of their rich friends, and what they did, they started medical foundations, and then they took over the medical schools.
To control medicine.
Right. And what they started telling or teaching doctors was medicine from chemicals and poisons, allopathic medicine. And they shoved empirical medicine from plants, they shoved that right out the back door.
Because it's not profitable.
Right, exactly. You can't patent a plant. So, and then in the mid-30s, that's when Anslinger took over, the head of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics. What a piece of work he was. But, this man, at first, he was always screaming that it caused people to go crazy and kill their families and all of this nonsense. A few years later, in the early 50s, during the beginning of the Cold War, he was out claiming that cannabis made people too pacified. Suddenly, it didn't kill people. It made you too damn peaceful. And he was afraid that people wouldn't defend their country. And then he went to the United Nations in 1954. He had the United Nations declare cannabis, the most medicinal plant on earth, to be non-medicinal. And then in 1961, when they brought in the Single Convention Treaty and treaties after that, you know, if you were a member of the United Nations, then you had to prohibit your people from the use of cannabis. But when, you know, you trace it back, who's in control of all of this? You know, people think that, you know, that their governments and these people that they elect are actually working for them. This is nonsense. Every political party has been taken over years ago. It doesn't make any difference who gets in. They're not going to represent the people. They're representing the big money interests because they've all become corrupted. And then the government, in turn, they control our education system, our legal systems, our medical systems. And this is the situation we're in today. But I mean, all you have to do is look at the real basis of medicine. And that's called the Hippocratic Oath. And right in that oath, it states, first, do no harm.
Right.
And it also states, as a physician, I shall not administer poison. But they have a new oath today. What a pack of nonsense that is. It basically exonerates the doctors from passing poison out. You know, so
it's licensed to kill. I told that to another doctor.
It's true. It is a license to kill. And that's just what these oncologists have been doing with their chemo and radiation. And they know it. Because most oncologists will not take their own treatments. That's a well-known fact. And, you know, if I'm a doctor and I won't take my own treatments, then why in God's green earth would I give them to someone else?
Do you know who Greg Caton is?
No, that name doesn't sound familiar.
Well, he now lives in Ecuador, but he used to have a lab in Louisiana. And he created this cream called CanSema that cured skin cancer. And he, of course, the FDA raided him, and they basically burned his lab down, and he had to plead guilty, otherwise it would take his wife and his child. So he went to Ecuador after he was released years later from federal prison, and they extraordinarily renditioned him in Ecuador, took him back to the United States, went to prison again. He's now back in Ecuador, by the way. But just wanted to get your take on this. This is happening all over the place.
Oh, this doesn't surprise me at all. You know, I think this, what it was, you know, with me, like in the early days, like in 2003, 2004, I mean, I went to the local newspapers in 2004. They did full page articles about what I was doing. I wasn't hiding a thing. I mean, I was giving the extracts to people for nothing. I was growing the plants and giving them the extracts to heal themselves. And then in 2004, we put up the website, phoenixtears.ca, and right on that site, we told the whole world how to heal themselves. And and that was my hope at the time that they would, you know, act on it, and now many people have, but unfortunately, many people are also, you know, using my name to defraud people, you know, like for these scam artists. And that's a horror story, but you know, I just thought that sooner or later the Canadian government would have to sober up and do the right thing because, you know, I was treating, well, hundreds and hundreds of patients. And then in the end, well, over from 2003 until about 2009, I treated, I figure, well over 5,000 people, you know, with all kinds of different conditions, but a great number of cancer patients. So, I mean, being so open and honest about it, you know, I thought that sooner or later they would recognize it. But instead, they persecuted me. You know, we had some meetings at the local Legion in Macan, and the first meeting I brought in, I think it was about 12 patients to testify, you know, to the audience. And we videotaped all of this. We sent that, you know, away to these news and information shows and television, you know, in Canada, like W5, the Fifth Estate, shows like that. And we, you know, and I actually took a copy right into the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. And I told them at the time, I said, there's local politicians that should be arrested, you know, for criminal negligence, because I'd been to them all and they wouldn't lift a finger. And so I gave them, you know, the videotape of the patients and everything. As a matter of fact, we videoed me taking it right into them, right into the RCMP, because I didn't have any trust in them either. And I even asked the RCMP, I told them openly that I was going to grow cannabis right in my backyard. And I asked them for anything, you know, that they confiscated, like the high-grade indica buds. You know, I wanted them to give it to me so I could make more medicine. So 3 months later, the same detachment that I had given this evidence to, they come and raid me. You know, and I was charged with, cultivation, possession, and trafficking.
Didn't they land their helicopter behind your property?
Yes, they did. Yeah, well, the helicopters in my backyard were not something unusual. You know, every year after that, they were always patrolling that area. But, you know, I still thought that, you know, there had to be some justice in Canada. But after they charged me, I mean, I mean, the bottom line was, you know, cultivation. Well, I was giving the medicine away, so I had to grow the plants, you know, to provide the medicine. I wasn't selling it. And, I mean, so that's your cultivation. Possession, of course, I had to possess the cannabis to make the extract. And, you know, and this business about trafficking, when you look up the definition of trafficking in a dictionary, it says the exchange of goods for monetary gain. Well, I wasn't gaining anything. But, I mean, I just didn't realize how corrupted the legal system was. Because the first day I went to court, I took the videotape in that I had taken to the RCMP. I gave it to the local the Chronicle Herald. That's the provincial paper. I gave the Chronicle Herald reporter a copy of this, and I gave a copy of the same video to the Crown Prosecutor. And I told them, I said, this does not belong in a court of law. But, you know, they didn't make any difference to them. They just continued on. So I was advised then that I should... I should have a charter challenge. Well, they had confiscated 1,620 plants from my backyard in 2005. Although when it was reported later, the RCMP suddenly seemed to have lost over 400 of them. So I think they must have took them home and used them themselves or something. I don't know what happened there. But in 2006, I put another 1,100 clones in my backyard. The police came in again, raided me again. No charges this time. They said they were with the marijuana eradication program. You know, it's more like kill your fellow Canadians program.
But wouldn't they arrest you if they're confiscating that?
Well, I mean, they already had the charges pending from 2005, and I hadn't been through the legal system yet. But, after that, I heard of many different people getting raided, but no charges. They just come in, stole their plants, you know, and left. It's truly pathetic, but I was advised that I should mount a charter challenge because in Canada we have what's known as the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which is nothing but a bad joke in reality. I found out through my experience, you know, when I went through the charter challenge, I brought in 48 sworn affidavits from people who had used these extracts. And my medical history was there too. You know, I had my pathology reports and everything to prove that, you know, that I had cancer. And, the judge just said he took all the affidavits. He said they were anecdotal. In other words, they didn't mean a thing. And then he said that I didn't exhibit any life-threatening problems. So according to this learned judge, you know, having post-concussion syndrome is not life-threatening. And apparently, skin cancer is not life-threatening either. I mean, what a bad joke. So after that, the next time I was in court, they said that I could appeal it, but I just told the judge point blank. I said, you know, what would be the point? You know, I know the game you people are playing, so I don't want to appeal it. I want to take this right into the Supreme Court of Nova Scotia. I want different judge, and I want different prosecutors because I don't trust any of these. And the judge didn't like that too much, but... when I went into the Supreme Court of Nova Scotia, there was the same judge and the same prosecutors. And the whole court case I went through was literally nothing but a sham. But you see, the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, it says as a Canadian, you have the right to life. But what I found was the only time you have that right is when you're willing to take what they tell you to take. If you want to use something natural like cannabis extracts, you no longer have the right to life. You know, this is truly pathetic. But when the court case finally got underway, I defended myself. And I exchanged words with that judge on many occasions during that case because they were saying such outrageous things that, you know, it just enraged me the way they were behaving. And I had brought in 10 patients. Two of these patients had been cured with terminal cancers. And I brought in 6 doctors. I had a mountain of scientific evidence to introduce. They wouldn't let, well, first you see the, the prosecution, they present their case first. Well, they brought all these RCMP officers in talking about their brave exploits in my backyard. And, you know, it all sounded good until I cross-examined them. And then I asked them, I said, you know, do you know about the evidence that I took in to the RCMP?
Did you represent yourself?
Yes, I did.
Huh, okay.
I didn't have any money, so I had to. But I asked the RCMP, you know, I said, did you look into the evidence that I gave you 3 months before the raid? Well, and they wouldn't answer me. All they said was, we know of this evidence, but we've never examined it. And I said, well, is it common practice for the Royal Canadian Mounted Police not to look at evidence? You know, and then I would hold up a copy of the newspaper from 2004, a year before I was raided. Full page, you know, article, picture of me and everything, detailing everything I was doing. And I said, would a criminal go to the local newspaper and let them do articles like this? And each one of the police, they all had to agree that, yes, a criminal would not behave like this. You know, of course not. And they had this guy, he was supposed to be the Royal Canadian Mounted Police marijuana expert. And I warned the prosecutor before he put him on the stand. I said, if you put that guy on the stand, I'm going to shred him. So anyway, they put him on, and oh, he went on about, you know, the dangers of marijuana and his vast experience. You know, he was a total BS character is what he was. But at the during the cross-examination, when I got my turn at him, I said, you're here as an expert for the RCMP in the field of marijuana. He said, yes, that's correct. I said, what do you know about hemp? Well, I don't know anything about hemp. I'm a marijuana expert. And I said, oh, you're a marijuana expert, but you really don't know that marijuana is actually the cannabis hemp plant. The man was a total fool. And during his earlier statements, before I cross-examined him, he stated that he felt that cannabis presented a danger and it was addictive. And so I asked him point blank. I said, sir, have you ever used cannabis? And to my surprise, he admitted that he had. And I said, did you become addicted? No. And just made a total fool of him. You know, so... you know, once the prosecution was done, I mean, their case was looking mighty shaky.
He was good for the defense afterward.
Yeah, I mean, they just made fools of themselves. So, you know, and then it was my turn to present my case, but then the judge wouldn't allow the patients on the stand because you're not allowed to have a medical argument. He wouldn't allow the doctors on the stand, and they wouldn't let me introduce the scientific evidence. So... the only one that could testify for me was me. So I spent 2 hours on the stand. Some of these people on the jury, I knew them because I treated family members they had and cured them. So I didn't think there was a hope in hell they could convict me of anything. So I told the jury the whole story. And so then when the jury retired, they were only gone about 3 hours, and we were called back to the courthouse. So I went in and I sat down, and there was this woman named Monica McQueen. She was the prosecutor from the Justice Department, and she did she did all the talking during my charter challenge and through this court case. But right beside her sat Doug Shatford, the Crown prosecutor. So when I entered the courtroom, Monica McQueen was there, but Doug Shatford was missing. So we sat there for 4 or 5 minutes, and then finally Shatford came in and sat down, and then a minute or so later, in come the jury. So when I stood up, I mean, I was shocked. It was just guilty, guilty, guilty. And I looked at these jury, and I said, guilty of what? You know, saving people's lives? Is that really a crime in Canada? You know, it just blew my mind. And then, the judge, he cut right in. And he said something, and I just told the judge point blank. I said, listen, pal, you better lock me up right now, because the minute I get out of here, I'm going right back to distributing these extracts. He never said a word, never told me not to do it. You know, so this went on, well, for the next few months. I wasn't sentenced until, I guess it was early February 2008. And but we had shot the documentary Run from the Cure in 2007. So that was released about 2 weeks before my sentencing. which I think made them a bit uncomfortable. And then when I went in for the sentencing, there was about 35 or 40 supporters of mine came into the courtroom too. That was the first time I ever seen metal detectors used in the Amherst courthouse. So, you know, that these legal eagles were fearful because they knew that what they were doing, and so did everyone else. But, you know, when the judge started the sentencing, he said, under different circumstances, he said, Mr. Simpson would be winning awards for his work. And then he stated, he said, in my 34 years in the legal system, I've never seen a case like this. There was no criminal intent. Now, this was the same judge that wouldn't allow the scientific evidence to be introduced, and he wouldn't allow me to put the patients on the stand. But then the judge came right out and stated it. He said, the scientific evidence does exist to back up everything Mr. Simpson is saying, and he also has this large body of evidence from the patients that he supplied the extracts to. You know, and I thought, well, there it is. You know, instead of crying out for joy that we found the medicine of our dreams, it went on like it meant nothing. So it was, I was facing 12 years in jail, but it was left to the judge's own discretion, you know, what the sentence would be. Oh, I'm sorry, I left out part of here. I'm half asleep anyway because it's early in the morning here.
That's okay.
I'll have to go backtrack a little bit. That day when I was sentenced, or not sentenced, but when the verdict came down, it was the day afterwards. A lady that had been in the audience that day, she called me and she told me that she had witnessed the Crown prosecutor leaving the jury room just a minute before they came in. And I had her go back and check this all out. She said, told me herself, she said, from where I was sitting, there was only one doorway visible when you look down the hall, and that was the jury room. This was reported to the judge. About 2 weeks later, they called us to go to Amherst. And when we went to Amherst to the courthouse, I thought it was for a meeting. But when I walked in, here was the judge sitting on the bench, and the two prosecutors, this Monica McQueen and Doug Shatford, they were there, and they were represented by some idiot lawyer from Halifax. And, and as soon as we walked through the door, it was Margaret Dwyer, who was a friend of mine's wife, Margaret Dwyer, that's seen all of this. And as soon as we walked through the door, the judge said, he warned Margaret right there, he said, if we find anything you're saying to be untrue, you could be facing 14 years in jail for perjury. And Margaret just looked at him and she said, look, I'm here to tell the truth. So they put her on the stand. And Margaret is probably the most truthful person I've ever met. But that lawyer that the prosecutors had, he attacked her in every way he could. He even insinuated that the only reason she was doing this was because if I went to jail, she would lose her supplier. You know, and Margaret just
really?
Margaret just laughed at him and she said, do you actually think that Rick Simpson is the only person in Canada that grows cannabis? You know, she made a fool out of him. They couldn't disprove a damn word she said. So then they said it was my turn. So I called Doug Shatford to the stand and I got him on the stand. And I got to know a lot of the local dealers and growers and stuff. And two of these dealers had told me that Doug Shatford himself had bought cannabis from them. So I said, Mr. Shatford, could you tell us about your use of cannabis? And when I said that, his face got as red as a tomato. He started spitting and sputtering. And then the judge jumped right in and defended him. You know, that line of questioning will not be tolerated. Well, you know, I said to him, I said, well, their lawyer asked Margaret Dwyer about her use of it. Now, why can't I ask him? You know, the whole thing was fixed. So it was truly pathetic. But in the end, the judge said he thought it was something that me and Mrs. Dwyer had cooked up, you know, to derail my sentencing. Unbelievable. But anyway, like I said about the sentencing, this is what the judge said. And I forget, the Crown wanted to put me in jail for 2 or 3 years or something like that. But in the end, they gave me a $2,000 fine and a gun restriction. But there was no firearms involved. You know, the RCMP, when they conducted their raids, they were waving guns around. That's about the only thing they're any good at.
Did you have a pellet rifle?
Yeah, I had a pellet gun in the house. You know, big dangerous pellet gun. But this whole thing was, they did give me the gun restriction. But see, what happens in Canada, if you're convicted of trafficking, that comes with an automatic gun restriction. So I mean, it really sickened me. And I was looking at the time, I started looking for other countries that I might be able to go and, you know, continue on with this research. But, you know, people keep coming, you know, the patients. Well, the very next morning, there was people knocking on my door looking for oil. So, I mean, I just kept going. And for the following almost 2 years, they basically left me alone. But in 2009, I went to the Cannabis Cup to do a lecture there, and they were making me Freedom Fighter of the Year. And I had been out of Canada then for about a week, and I got this call from my son.
Cannabis Cup, this is in Amsterdam, isn't it?
Yes, in Amsterdam.
Right.
But I got a call from my son telling me that the RCMP had raided my house again. So, you know, and I thought, well, what's this about? And then I started hearing, oh, they found restricted weapons, they found booby traps, and 70 pounds of pot in my home. You know, I mean, I've been robbed a couple times, so there's no way that I would leave Canada and go to Amsterdam and leave 70 pounds of pot laying around. And like I said, the only thing that was in my home was a pellet gun, and there was no booby trap. So when I was talking to my son, I said, what's this all about? Well, he said, I asked him about the booby traps, and he said, well, the day you left, Dad, there was a couple bags, small bags of garbage on the deck. But when I came back from the airport, the landfill was closed. He said, so I took some boards, and he said, I put a couple boards, you know, around these bags, and I put nails in them so the bears wouldn't get into them, which made perfect sense. But this is what the RCMP considered to be booby traps. And like I said, when I left for Amsterdam, there was just a pellet gun that any child can go into a hardware store and buy. And I knew for certain there was no 70 pounds of cannabis in my home. So I realized right at that point that they were trying to frame me. You know, because what was happening, you see, I was getting, a big following in Canada at that time. And it was becoming quite a thorn in the government's backside. So I think the idea was that if the government had the RCMP going and do this phony raid and bring these bogus charges against me, well, that would keep me out of Canada. And that's exactly what it did. I stayed in Europe, but I didn't keep my mouth shut. I started traveling from country to country, doing lectures with some of the top experts in the world, and I exposed to the whole world exactly what Canada is about. And in my opinion, actually, Canada and the U.S., today, they're nothing but police states. You know, it's just horrible what's happening there. And once the public knows the whole story about this medication and and this wonderful plant that they villainized, I think it becomes pretty clear that, you know, these governments in reality, well, the Canadian government outlawed the use of Indian hemp in 1923. That was before they started calling it marijuana. And then in 1937 with the Tax Act in the United States, that put an end to it there. But in reality, what these governments did, again, they outlawed the medicinal use of the most medicinal plant on earth. You know, and hundreds of millions, if not billions of people since that time have suffered and died simply over greed. This is genocide on a horrible scale. And all of these outfits, like the legal system and all of them, they're all in complicity. They're working against us.
I wonder, Rick, how many publications before all this time, perhaps from the, 19th century and before, that cite all the examples of hemp use for medicinal purposes. How many of them have been probably removed from libraries, from bookstores and publishers?
Oh, I expect a great number of it, or a great amount of it has. But the thing is you can't hide this plant. I mean, Ayurvedic medicine, that's one of the five main medical systems in India.
Right.
They've used cannabis since 1400 BC. And I always tell people, like, once I got really into this and started researching it, then I found out the holy anointing oil was full of cannabinoids, because at that time they called cannablossom. That was what the term they used for cannabis bud. But you look up the ingredients of the holy anointing oil, it was full of cannabinoids. You know, so I don't really think it was the power of God that Jesus was using to heal all those people. I think it was more than likely the power of cannabis.
Right.
And like I said, it was in widespread medicinal use. And, all through history, 200 years after Christ, the Chinese were using a mixture of wine and resin, these hemp resins, as an anesthetic to knock you out. And it did it harmlessly. They were doing amputations and organ manipulations, in other words, operations, painlessly. And, you know, through the Dark Ages and all the sword fights and stuff, it was a well-known fact that cannabis had the ability to heal wounds without leaving scars. But during the Spanish Inquisition, I mean, if they caught you using hemp medicine, well, then you were a witch and they'd have to burn you at the stake. But, you know, in the 1800s...
Why? Because of the miraculous activity that would ensue after somebody would be treated with hemp? And the church wanted to monopolize miracles?
Well, they didn't want people. They wanted people believing they needed the power of God to heal.
Right.
And see, that would deflate all of that. But then in the 1800s, when the drug companies, when they come into play, like E.I. Lilly, Park Davis, Squibb, those big companies we have today, back then, they were producing medicines from plants. And cannabis was one of their major ingredients. They used it in all countless different applications, different medicines for all many different types of diseases. But if you, you know, if you look at the pharmaceutical industry at that time, they were, what they would do, they would produce the essential oils from many different medicinal plants and herbs. Well, of course, you're going to produce the essential oil from the most medicinal plant, aren't you? But when I went did the research, not one pharmaceutical, I couldn't find one pharmaceutical company that ever supplied the real essential oil from that plant to the public. They dished it out in tinctures, you know, cannabis medicine watered down with alcohol. E.I. Lilly sold hash pills in the 1880s as painkillers. You know, I have no doubt that they worked. Great painkiller. But, you see, they controlled its potency, and they never supplied the real essential oils. So in the 1880s, they started playing around with the chemicals, and then in the early 1900s, like I said, Rockefeller and his rich friends, they got together and they pushed allopathic medicine. And there's a man from another Canadian named James Corbett. He does a series on the internet called The Corbett Report.
Yeah, from Japan.
From Japan.
Well, he's in Japan. He lives in Japan.
Oh, maybe he might be now. Yeah. I don't know. But he does The Corbett Report. And episode 286 of The Corbett Report is called Rockefeller Medicine. And all you have to do is listen to that report, and that will explain to you exactly why we have this horrible medical system we have today. It's not about healing. It's just about profit. You know, this whole thing, the pharmaceutical industry, I said it openly. I mean, I think the pharmaceutical industry must have produced the real extracts from the plant the same as I did. And I think they had them tested. Maybe one or two of their trusted doctors tested it, and then all of a sudden they found out, well, this medicine is good for everything. But the problem was, you couldn't patent it, and at that time, farmers everywhere were growing it freely.
And even if they could patent it, imagine that would just make the financial statements of a doctor go down because you would have people healed of so many diseases.
Exactly. And like I said, at the time, farmers everywhere were allowed to grow it. Now, if those farmers found out that they had the greatest medicine in the back, growing it right in their own backyards, you know, the pharmaceutical industry would be out of business. And this is what I'm out to do now. I want to drive these people out of business because they're nothing but gangsters. You know, they've proven that with these idiotic treatments they give us, you know, the chemo and the radiation. And it's not about healing anymore. You know, they want you to keep coming back, keep filling your prescriptions.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, it's just a game. We, you know, how much money can we suck out of every individual before they die?
Well, is the allopathic approach to healing, is it designed to heal anyone?
No, I don't believe so. I mean, I think we all know the results of chemo and radiation, but when you look at all these other medications they give people, you know, that are so harmful and addictive in so many cases. And then the real truth is, Mel, I mean, if you and I have the same medical problems, you know, the thing is we're different people. We have different body chemistry. But if we go to the same doctor with the same medical condition and he puts us on the same pills.
One size fits all.
Right. That doctor has no idea what effect it's going to have on you or me. You know, they're just playing games with us, for God's sakes. But we've been brainwashed by our own TVs. You know, in the 60s, we had the, you know, Dr. Kildare, Marcus Welby,
yeah.
Ben Casey, trust your doctor. You know, these wonderful individuals will do anything to save you. And then we had those other shows like Perry Mason. You know, if you didn't do wrong, the good lawyer will always get you off. They brainwashed the whole public into believing this nonsense. But as far as I'm concerned, lawyers particularly are just gangsters also. But, today you can't blame the politicians. You can't blame the doctors. You can't blame, the lawyers or the police officers. You know, we've all been exposed to this. We've all been brainwashed about this subject. But, with the overwhelming amount of proof that's out there today all over the internet, all of these people that had serious life-threatening conditions, putting up, video testimonials, describing their experiences on, with the use of these extracts. But yet the governments say that should be ignored. Like human trials must be done. Well, I got bad news for the government. I mean, ever since I brought this information out, human trials have been underway. And believe me, if the extracts are made properly, the batting average of this medication is just beyond belief. It's the most sensible thing that anyone can take for any condition. I mean, that includes multiple sclerosis, AIDS, even this flesh-eating disease. They found that this is the only substance that is effective in stopping flesh-eating disease. There's just no end to the medical uses here. But this is what they're so afraid of. They don't want the public to have the right to grow their own and produce their own extracts. But in reality, right in the Christian Bible, it states that we as human beings, we have the right to use these plants to the best of our benefit. Laws have to be based on the harm factor. Where's the harm here? No one has ever died from cannabis. It's non-addictive. There's no danger to it.
No, there's harm. There's harm. The financial harm that this would bring to the pharmaceutical industry.
Well, it's not just the pharmaceutical industry. The cannabis plant is a threat to many of these huge industries like the
petrochemicals.
And energy. They keep telling us, there's fossil fuels are running out. Well, who cares? Good riddance.
Yeah.
We can use cannabis. That'll supply all our energy needs, for God's sakes. The amount of alcohol that you can produce from cannabis is just outrageous.
But industrial-wise, didn't we use this prior to World War II? This was legal. Then it became illegal. And during World War II, we had hemp for victory. And temporarily, they lifted that ban so that we could produce a lot for the war machine?
Well, that's exactly what happened. I mean, they outlawed it in 1937. But when the Japanese invaded the Philippines, that cut off the hemp supply that the U.S. needed. Then suddenly the U.S. government, it's hemp for victory time. So all during the war, the farmers were growing cannabis. Right after the war, it's against the law again. What a fraud.
I recently, about a year ago, I interviewed this former police captain who told me, I was one of those people that would put people in jail for smoking marijuana. But he changed his mind and he's been retired for 20 years now. I don't know if you know the organization called LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Great, great people. And he and I were talking. Now, if you were going to be consistent, why not make alcohol illegal? Just like we have made, all these drugs illegal. But, 50 to 75% of convicted drunk drivers continue to drive on a suspended license. What, 10,000 people died last year from drunk drivers? So, explain to me, if we have all these deaths, how many deaths do we have per year for driving under the influence of cannabis?
I would say very few, maybe none at all. I mean, the thing is with cannabis, it's not like pharmaceuticals or alcohol. It doesn't impair your motor skills. When I used to start people on these extracts, I would tell them for the first 2 or 3 weeks, you're going to do a lot of sleeping. And it would be a good idea not to drive your car until you get the feel of this medicine. But once you get used to it, you're not impaired. You can drive your car safely. I drove tens of thousands of miles under the influence of cannabis. I never had accidents. And years ago, I used to drive big motorcycles. And I mean, if you're impaired, nothing will tell you faster than a motorcycle. And I drove that bike, again, tens of thousands of miles, never had a problem under the influence of cannabis. None whatsoever. So this is all a pack of lies, too. The other thing, too, they say, cannabis must be kept away from our children because their brains are still developing. What a crock that is. I mean, Melanie Dreher did this study back in the 1980s to find out where the healthiest babies on the planet were born. Well, guess what? They're born to cannabis-using mothers in Jamaica. And that was a proven fact, and she did follow-up studies and everything. Now, if the mother's use of cannabis would not harm the baby in the developmental stages in the womb, why would it present a danger to a child of any age? You know, I mean, when you look at the trash, you know, this attention deficit disorder and Ritalin and all of these crazy medications they put children on today. I mean, this is total insanity, for God's sakes.
One of the most successful people I know, a multimillionaire young guy who suffered from ADHD all his life, now has to smoke marijuana in order to stay normal. You know, what he considers to be normal, but he operates normally. And without it, he says, I would have to go to the medical industry, and I don't want to go there.
Well, no, the effects of the opiates and stuff, I mean, it causes problems with your stomach and constipation, and not to mention the addiction. You know, so there's so many problems associated with the use of pharmaceuticals. And the wonder I've seen here with the use of these extracts is that, you know, there were so many people coming to me with stage four cancer. I mean, they were right at death's door. And many of these patients had been taking, you know, substances like hydromorphine for months. They were badly addicted. But within a week and a half to 2 weeks, we could get them off the opiates, hardly any withdrawal symptoms. You know, this is a way we can bring this drug-addicted world back to reality. You know, because we have so many people out there today, you know, over 80% of deaths on the street are caused from pharmaceuticals. You know, and so we can bring, you know, these drug addicts back to a sensible way of life with the use of these extracts in a harmless way. Make them useful citizens again. But, of course, the drug companies don't want that because it would cut into their profit margins. You know, it's truly pathetic what's happening.
You know, folks, when you listen to people like Rick Simpson and Dr., you know, Stanislav Brzezinski and Greg Caton, you know, how they have been, you know, threatened with life in prison so many times, and they have hundreds, if not thousands, of testimonials from people coming forward saying, I was cured. This is not, you know, you have that little word, a remission. They love to use that word remission because it's that little boogeyman that's, you know, putting the head out in a few years, and it keeps you wondering if the cancer will be back. But these people have been cured, have been healed. But, you know, one makes you wonder, you know, doctors have such a dismal success rate with the use of these absurd treatments of cutting, poisoning, burning, that sooner or later they would be awakened to the fact that what they have been doing for decades, simply madness and not medicine. And no matter how much information you give the general public, why is it that the majority, when you tell them this information, they just think that you're a quack?
Well, because the mainstream media don't cover it. But the mainstream media, again, is controlled by who? The big money. You know, they just tell us what they want us to know or what they want us to believe, and they won't tell the public the truth. I mean, CNN and all these people, they've known about me since 2004, 2005. You know, do you see anything about me on CNN? You know, the whole thing is, the fix is in. You know, and people are so brainwashed, you know, they read their newspapers, they watch the boob tube, and they just get more and more of this propaganda.
Isn't the boob tube, the TV, the subliminal tube, as I call it, isn't that the most misused and destructive device ever invented?
I put that right in my book. I mean, it was the greatest thing I ever did in 2003 when I finally shut that stupid television off. You know, because it really is. It's a great tool for brainwashing the people, and that's the way they've used it. You know, and they're still using it that way. But, you know, if you want to educate yourself, start watching some, you know, documentaries. That's where you'll find the real truth about the world we're living in. And, you know, people like to say, well, like, you know, individuals like myself and Jack Hare, you know, David Icke, Max Egan, you know, they're just a bunch of conspiracy nuts. Well, I'll tell you right now, I feel sorry for people that can't see the conspiracy that surrounds us because, you know, they're just living in ignorance. I mean, it's so damn obvious. Our whole way of life is being manipulated and controlled by the rich elite. There's no question about it. I mean, that one family alone, the Rothschilds, they say that one family is worth over $500 trillion.
Yeah.
Now, that's not billion. This is trillion we're talking about. That family, that one family, have enough money to feed, house, and clothe every human being on Earth. And if you look at the track record of these people, for the last 200 years, these big banking concerns like the Rothschilds, I think in many cases, they're the ones that start these stupid wars. And when the wars get underway, then they fund both sides.
That's right.
Because there's big profit to be made in war.
Now look look at what happened in 1913 with the advent of the Federal Reserve. Immediately, what do we get? World War I. And they started financing both sides, and it's been like that ever since.
Yeah. So what are our soldiers fighting for? You know, you're just fighting to make these rich and powerful individuals even more powerful. It's totally ridiculous. They don't give a damn about the human race. They've just been manipulating us.
And many people say, you know, how dare you talk about our men and women in uniform, support the troops. Folks, I'm sorry. I feel for them because they are brainwashed. They are being used as cannon fodder, just like that speech that Charlie Chaplin gave us many years ago.
Oh, yes. That was wonderful. But, I mean, I've talked to many soldiers that have returned to places like, you know, from Iraq and Afghanistan. And, you know, these soldiers are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yes.
And what does the government do? Well, they bring them home, they put them on opiates.
Yeah.
Get them good and addicted, and then they start calling them drug addicts. You know, the doctors made them drug addicts. This is ridiculous. But, you know, again, this is another thing. If these soldiers get on these extracts, it's wonderful. It's wonderful because it lets them deal with these problems. The same thing, you know, like schizophrenics. They always said, you know, people should stay away from cannabis because it could turn you into a schizophrenic. Well, what we're finding with the use of these extracts, I've seen schizophrenics take these extracts and go right back to normal right before my eyes. You know, I think it's the most effective treatment for schizophrenia and practically, like I said, any disease you can name. This is the healing effects. You know, see what I was doing? I started growing many different varieties of the strong sedative indicas. And what I was seeing, like, luckily for us, practically all the sedative indicas are very effective in the treatment of cancer. But the medical qualities from strain to strain can vary a great deal. I mean, some strains are better for relieving pain. Other strains are better for lowering ocular pressure for glaucoma patients or for controlling blood sugar and all the damage that diabetes does. You know, so you get all of these different characteristics and these different strains. So one day I used to make the extracts all separate, and then I would give them out, and the patients were reporting back to me the effects they found. And, you know, then different ones, like I said, pain relief and all these other useful things. So I used to sit there one day, and I thought, well, what would happen if you took all of these extracts, and I had about six different jars there, what would happen if you just took them and mixed them all together? And that's what I did. And then you have a cure-all then. You know, people were coming to me with terminal cancer. They had bad eyesight, arthritis, diabetes, God knows what else. And what we were finding, after taking 60 grams of these extracts over a 90-day period, their eyesight improved, their arthritis disappeared, and in so many cases, these patients no longer even needed insulin. And on top of that, their cancers were gone. You know, it's hard to believe that our world is truly this corrupted.
I'd like to know what makes things tick. For example, I know at one point you lost weight and you kept it off after using this. What exactly happens in the body? Is it that you become so relaxed that your cortisol levels go down, inflammation levels go down? What exactly happens biologically?
Well, basically...
Thank you for listening to the first segment of this very important Sanitas interview. If you enjoyed it and wish to listen to the rest, go to sanitasradio.com, click on members or subscribe, or tell someone else who will enjoy this and all our radio programs. If you're listening on YouTube, like, subscribe, and share it. Don't forget to visit the Sanitas store, where you can purchase pure organic sulfur, earthing and grounding products, supplements, our USB drive with all our shows, gift certificates, rebounders, and much more. Now, join me in the Sanitas member section to enjoy the rest. Thank you.